Phil, how are the cities going to deal with the population growth that's projected within the next 40 years? What's going to happen with resources like water and air?
Well, you know, with the water, Don, we have to shape the growth so that we use less water. Suburban households, like mine, I'm one of the offenders, you know, we have yards, and we have a lot of plants in the yards, and we water all these plants, and it consumes a lot of water. When you compare the amount of water used per household in that situation with the amount of water that's used by a family of four in a mid-rise building, mid-rise residential building, it's really very different. The urban type of living where the family is maybe on the fifth floor of a eight-story building uses a lot less water. And if the development is done right, there'll be open space right around the building. So a 10-acre site could have maybe 5 acres consumed by buildings, but another 5 acres for open space that would have trees and vines and shrubs and grass and open spaces for athletic fields and so on. But all of that would be very carefully irrigated, and we could be using a lot of gray water. So you have a high-density building producing a lot of dishwashing water and shower water. That could be used for the irrigation right on that premises. And so the type of growth that we have makes a big difference in the consumption of water. So we do have to encourage this high-density type of development that has a lot of high-quality open spaces right around the residential area. So that's one item. We have to teach and practice conservation. You know, going out and finding new sources of water is very expensive when you have to get a claim on it in the first place, and you have to fight someone to get that, and then you have to build a dam, and then you have to store the water, and then you have to convey it. All of that's very expensive. But if we can take water we already have, at least that we already have a right to, you might say, and conserve it, we can achieve about 25%, one quarter of the amount of water we'll need in the future just out of conservation. So some of our growth will come out of conservation. Aside from that is we have to have local jurisdictions that assert themselves, and I'm talking about city councils and boards of supervisors that are willing to step to the plate and take the initiative. And I think we've seen that here in this last week, this week being the 14th of February of 2005, the city of Visalia basically has made a policy that when developers bring land into the city for development, either residential or commercial or a combination of those, that they have to bring water with them. And that makes perfect sense. These developers will have to bring in surface water, such as river water or some irrigation canals. And that water will then be either used to percolate into the underground, into the aquifer, to be pumped out later, or in due time, after several decades, some of that surface water will probably be treated and used for drinking water in that manner. But in any case, I think it's really healthy that cities like Visalia and other jurisdictions in the San Joaquin Valley are requiring new developments to bring their own water in effect. I also think that we can build our capital for water in local jurisdictions by saying, look, when you come into our area or when you start a new household, you have to put up for a household of four, $3,000. That money is then a capital fund to teach conservation, to provide the incentives to put in water-saving devices. It's money for planning water development. It's money for implementing, putting in ponding basins, percolation ponds. It's money for infrastructure like conveyances, canals, and large conduits that would be buried underground, storage, And most of our storage, I think, in the future will probably be the water bank idea, where you convey water to a locale where you want to pump it out later. And if you have sandy soils, as they do around Visalia, then that water can be percolated into the aquifer. And so we're going to have a lot of that kind of storage, probably not as much surface storage, new surface storage, as we've had in the last 60 years, new storage coming online. So we're going to have more of that. But I think just the local jurisdictions taking the lead, not being afraid of the electorate reacting, oh, we can't pay for that. We're just going to have to explain why and just keep the message out there, be very consistent that this is a serious issue. We have to fund it, and we're going to have to get people to put up this money. And there's nothing wrong with putting money up front and having it, rather than going in the backward way that we do so much of and debt financing these large projects. So that's one thing. I think what we'll see over time, too, I mentioned a while ago that this ditch water would be used for urban development. Well, to any farmer in the audience, that means, in this radio audience, means that that's water that's going to be diverted from farming to urban uses. And I think as much as we don't like that, and I'm from a farm family, we have quite a bit of farmland, that is just a reality. I think we're going to see more and more of that, where the water that's already in the region that is being used for irrigation water, some of that water, an increasing amount of that water, will be used for urban uses as the land changes in use from agriculture to urban. But I think with improved technologies, with conservation education, and with the right kinds of urban residential buildings, we can have less water consumption per household than has been the case in the past. And so we won't be quite so consumptive of water in our urban areas. It's been said that urban use, water use, is about the same per acre as farms, about 3 acre-feet per acre. In other words, you have 3 feet of water that is consumed every year on a given space of land. But I think we can reduce that in the urban areas with new technologies, with more public education, and with the right kinds of residential and commercial developments. We can use all that gray water for irrigation. We can use a lot of native plants that we have in our Sierra foothills, low consumption of water, but provide considerable beauty when you look at their foliage and their blossoms and all of the different things that they provide in the way of color and shape. These native plants are thrifty and also beautiful. They are also medicinal in many cases, so we can use that to an advantage. We can also treat our forests better. We can go up there and thin out in our fir groves and our pine groves the trees that really shouldn't be there, that would have been eliminated by small fires, that the type that the Native Americans had done for centuries before we came along, we Europeans. But in other words, just go in and thin out the forest, remove brush at the lower elevations, the 2 to 5,000 foot elevation. We have a lot of extra brush that's consuming a lot of water. If we do those things, if we decommission some of the unnecessary dirt roads, we can increase the yield of our watershed on rivers like the San Joaquin and the Kings Rivers by 20%. Well, if you look at the San Joaquin River, that has an annual average, of course, annual watershed of 1.8 million acre-feet. If you improve that by 20%, that would be 360,000 extra acre-feet. So that gives you some room for growth, and that growth could be part urban, part agriculture, and some of the water could be used for environment. So we have to take a look at the forest and make that as an integral part of our urban growth, how we take care of the forest and how that impacts our water supply. I think another thing we have to look at with our forests is that in recent years, there's been a trend toward more rain at the higher elevations than there was, say, 100 years ago. And as we get more rain and less snow, we lose that that year-round water supply that we have with the snow-based water system. With a snow-based system, of course, you have snow melting all through the summer and all into the fall. And that water, it goes. Some of it goes by stream, of course, down into the rivers. And other water goes into the mountainside and comes out later in springs. And some of those springs come out and they feed into the river at lower elevations that keeps the river alive throughout the summer and fall. But other water comes out in springs that's actually in the bottoms of lakes, and it keeps those lakes fresh and with new water coming in. And so what we want to do is take a close look at this warming of the atmosphere that's driving the climate to put more rain on our Central Sierra instead of snow. And we need to reverse that process. And a part of that, of course, is to have fewer cars throughout our region and throughout the San Francisco Bay Area and throughout California, for that matter. But the traffic that most impacts us is our own region and the San Francisco Bay Area. So we have to have fewer cars. We have to have fewer trucks and run trucks more efficiently with fewer emissions. And generally get to the point that our power plants and our other polluters are putting out fewer gases that capture heat in the atmosphere. That's what's driving our big change in the weather. So we need to put pressure on state and federal government, we in this region, in the San Joaquin Valley, to lower the emission of gases such as carbon dioxide and methane that capture heat in our atmosphere and drive our weather systems to rain more on our mountains instead of snowing as they have in the past. So those are all things that we need to do in the water issues. And I think in the farm sector, farming is already reacting to the water market. The water market is driving up the price of agricultural water, and farmers are, as they get these higher prices for water, are discovering more and more ways to irrigate more efficiently. I have some farmland in western Fresno County that is right on Interstate 5, and my neighbor is a lettuce grower. And they can grow a crop of lettuce in the spring on 9 inches of water. And so they're able to do it because they've spent a lot of money on getting the land level. And then they put in a drip system that uses a tape, and it meters the water very carefully so that each head of lettuce, each lettuce plant is getting about the same amount of water. I wouldn't say perfectly exactly, but it's when you look at the lettuce, you swear it must be the exact same amount of water because they all look exactly alike. And they do things like incorporate a lot of humus into the soil. So these are farming practices that can save water, and we're going to see more and more of them as the price of water goes up.